Welcome to Manager Tools. Hire slow, fire fast is wrong. Part one. Today's cast answers these questions. What does hire slow, fire fast mean? What's wrong with it? What should I do? Well, if you want answers to these questions and more, keep listening. Here we go.
Often, groups really like trainings. The day is high energy, the content sounds exciting, and at the end of the day, everyone is fired up. But maybe you've experienced that after that, there's a loss of momentum. No matter how great the content, it can be hard to make behavioral changes, both for ourselves and within the group, which is why we created Enterprise Reporting, so that you and your team can not only implement the Manager Tools Trinity over time, but you can also measure your changed behaviors. Sustained change over time to support the goals of the organization is why we created Enterprise Reporting. And isn't that the measure of a successful training? How many people are doing one-on-ones this week? How many pieces of feedback did John give to his team? How much value is my team getting out of that training? We can help. Send us a note and we'd be happy to tell you all about Enterprise, Roadmap, and EMC trainings in-house with your organization.
Hire slow, fire fast. That doesn't sound terrible, Mark. I mean, what's wrong with that?
Nah. It's great if you're 10 years old and you're trying to make a general point that doesn't hold up under tough scrutiny, but you know.
Tough scrutiny has no place in business.
Yeah, it has a kernel of truth to it, but it's also pretty misleading, I think, for a lot of people. Because if you're an effective manager, you can actually hire quickly. And frankly, you wouldn't terminate someone's employment unless you had gone through long and careful consideration. So I just suggested you can hire fast, and we ought to ethically fire slowly. So three parts of the cast. First of all, I'll give you the organization. First, we're going to talk about what it means. Then we're going to talk about what's wrong with it. And then we're going to talk about what you should do, even though we try to avoid use the word should around here. This cast came out of a tweet I did because I'm trying to tweet more in light of my new book, The Effective Hiring Manager, will be published in 2019, the first half of 2019, we think, about how to hire and specifically how to interview as well.
Yeah, and it starts off, the first sentence is hire slow, fire fast.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so I tweeted something and there was a response that said hire slow, fire fast. And in generally, it was thematically useful. I thought the person was well-intentioned. And there are certainly a lot of people who believe in that generally. But again, hire slow, fire fast is kind of common wisdom. And of course, wisdom isn't common. That's the whole point of the phrase, common wisdom. And I realized, you know, it's probably worth explicating a little bit because we want newer managers who can hear phrases like that and go, oh, okay. And I suspect there are executives who still think that, hey, hire slow, fire fast, you know. But we have to peel the layers a little bit to understand.
Yeah, it's often true when you have something that's a catchy phrase that's trying to summarize, you know, a book's worth of information about hiring, right? So it's easy to misunderstand.
Yeah. So it's rooted in the correct idea that talent and effectiveness of employees of any given firm are its ultimate competitive advantage. And so you've got to be very careful to not hire the wrong person, which in some people's mind would happen if you hire fast. I would argue that, as we'll talk about in this cast, that there's a difference between being quick and being rash. In other words, separating the quality of one's decision from the speed at which one makes it.
You give an example, and we'll get to it later, but if you have a strong bench and you've been courting somebody for a long time, waiting for the perfect position because you've worked with this person for years, and she's the best at whatever you need that you've ever met, and you know her inside and out, and you know she's great, like, why would you wait 4 months to hire her, right? I mean, yeah. That's the extreme end of this thing.
Yeah, exactly. And to be fair, there are many managers who are caught in organizational hell because they don't get the support they need. It takes that long and so on, but there are ways around that too. So look, when you say it, hire slow, fire fast, in order to send a message that you don't want to make a wrong decision hiring. And then on the other side, if you finally decided that somebody doesn't meet your standards, you need to move quickly to get rid of them. Although the process by which you get to should be a long one, hopefully. But when you say it that way, it makes sense. But frankly, a lot of things make sense or are clever or pithy or aphoristic when you say them a certain way. Look, democracies are about power to the majority. Then if you think that, if you believe that, then well, surely it's about taking power away from the minority, right? Well, actually, no. Good democracies have circuit breakers in effect that the majority can't dominate the minority. Our point here in sharing the democracy idea is that if you immediately recoil from the idea that the majority's job is to take power away from the minority, it's because you have a good enough understanding of the principles involved that you know that democracies also have protections for non-majority parties, okay? But when you start talking about management, most professionals do not have a good enough understanding of the underlying principles in order to sort out good guidance from pablum, from catchy phrases. Now, folks, I don't mean to indict you because Mike and I didn't know this stuff when we first started management. In fact, there are many people who are learning the majority of what they know about the underlying principles of management from us. And the reason you're learning it from us is we don't want you to have to wait as long as we did and make as many mistakes as we did to learn it. Look, Mike and I could have easily said, you know, gotta hire slow, right? That's the rule. And then lost candidates because we were being what amounts to unnecessarily deliberate. In fact, in a way, just to show our bosses that we were hiring slow. If you believe hiring slow is a good principle, and by the way, you're feeling pain with that open position, but you know this aphorism exists, you're like, okay, well, I'm going to take my time. You don't necessarily think I need to add more checks into the process to make sure. Part of the reason I would hire slow is it gives me more time to think about the person and so on, as opposed to just saying, maybe if I'm a new manager and I'm doing my first hiring, hiring slow means I have to bow to HR's will because they take longer than I would want to. I mean, if you don't know the underlying rationale why things are the way they are, you don't know any better. You don't know whether or not this is absolutely critical, don't ever hire quickly, or if it's a good idea, but it's rooted, like we say, in bad ideas. Look, by the same token, Mike and I could have fired somebody summarily in our careers. In fact, Mike, we still owe our audience a podcast about your experience moving over to Bell Atlantic and coming back, and the experience of being told you need to fire someone.
Yeah, it is close to Halloween, so it is a horror story of sorts, so maybe it would have been a good topic for this week.
We could have done that because we knew our stuff, so to speak, and we're confident about what we know, and you know, good managers fire people fast, and then we would have gotten in trouble with HR. And to be honest, we made a lot of mistakes of these kinds of type when we were first struggling to learn management, and we don't want you to. So, in theory, it's good, but when you're comparing two different behaviors along a singular timeline, in this case, hiring and firing are the two different behaviors, which have very different principles associated with them, and we'll get into those, and then you're comparing them on one criteria, speed, it's always good to think twice about that. Sometimes things aren't as simple as they sound.
Okay, so let's talk about what's wrong with it. What's wrong with the idea of hiring slow, firing fast.
Yeah. So not understanding that hiring slow, firing fast is a gross oversimplification will cause you to make mistakes in the two of the most important processes you're responsible for as a manager. That's really what it boils down to. If you take hiring slow too far, you won't be able to hire during market upturns. And look, this is the latter half of 2018. This is one of the greatest job markets, maybe the greatest job market I can remember in 40 years of paying attention to job markets. And, you know, market upturns mean business growth, right? And you wouldn't want to not have people to process growth, which is more profitable generally than the the revenue your firm makes during a downturn, all things being equal, unless your company is very good at race, don't chase, which C. Candidates will get more offers earlier in their processes of searching during a market upturn, and those offers will be more competitive. And when there's a limited supply and demand is high, prices go up. The job market and salaries are affected enormously by the basic principles of supply and demand. They'll see a manager who has this idea of hiring slow and taking time and letting it percolate as a lack of interest. You think you're being deliberate and smart and following the rules. The rules are hire slow. They'll think of it as a lack of interest. And you would too. And you have to. We've all been in the experience of wondering whether or not an offer is going to come. And you assume, gosh, if they really wanted me, they would talk to me about it. They would be saying something, doing something. That may not be true, because the vast majority of managers don't know how to manage during a hiring process, don't know how often to communicate, don't know what to say, which, of course, is the point of our next book. Now, look, this kind of pressure that happens in a market upturn doesn't happen nearly as much during downturns, because candidates know, you know, the whole beggars can't be choosers. So you're not going to pressure a company and say, look, if you don't move quickly, I'm going to go somewhere else. You might if you're very confident, or if you're one of a kind, or if you're famous, but the vast majority of people wouldn't, and it'll just be fingers crossed that things are slowly proceeding. Look, delays occur in the process of hiring when interviewers can't seem to get together right after their interviews to discuss a candidate. But think about that for a second. What's the purpose of delaying the decision-making and communication part of interviewing? When no value is going to be added to a candidate's interview or the decisions that people make once the interviews are complete, there's no value. I mean, the moment all the interviews are done, a decision exists if it's not been communicated, or a choice exists, and it could become a decision very, very quickly. But if you don't know that and you think, well, let's talk next week, it'd be hard for everybody to get together this afternoon.
Well, I can let the candidate, you know, I can let it percolate in my mind, and I'll probably make a better decision after waiting a week, two, or three, or four, because I'm so sharp.
Yeah.
My mind is so sharp that I remember everything that was said during the interview.
Yeah, and every single time it's been done to me, I've had to wait, so waiting apparently is a thing. Slow hiring is a thing. Look, and once a decision is made, its value declines the longer it takes to be communicated, right? The situation changes. Now you wait a week to make your decision and then two more days to communicate it because you're waiting on a sniggly little detail from HR and the compensation and benefits people, because it just so happens they're in their compensation review period right now. And so it would be misleading for a candidate to quote 2017 numbers or 2018 numbers when in fact 2019 numbers will be different. And we're talking about a quarter of a percentage point on something that probably will never matter to the candidate. I mean, all that stuff is okay, great. And during that time, your candidate got another offer. And, oh, by the way, that manager is desperate and says, you know, if you need to talk to me about salary, let me know. And just the fact that the competing offer is less than yours, but the manager was first, the hiring manager was first, and told the candidate, look, if you need more money, I think I could do something there, puts you in second place, even if your offer is more money. Because that first offer is that's the first real jolt of positivity that candidate had. And look, that's just the beginning. Hiring slow in managers' minds, when they see the way things go on their experience as a candidate, but also internally getting things done and getting the requisition opened up and all the approvals and the budget to, you know, pay for somebody's hotel or whatever. You can't allow that to be justification for slow administration, okay? If you have slow administration around hiring, you have a special kind of problem. You can't answer questions about the delays that are happening in the processing for candidates. They're going to say, well, hey, look, I'd love to know something. And, you know, you're going to say, well, you know, they're working on it or something. If other people are handling administration of hiring, like HR or recruiting or staffing or people systems, And I don't mean to suggest that they're lollygagging. They got plenty of other stuff to do. Unfortunately, you're one of 30 managers or 50 managers or in a market upturn, 200 managers who are hiring now. And oh, by the way, if you don't have any relationships with people in HR, you haven't built any friendships, you don't know who to call, you don't have the cell phone number of that HR person who is not at his desk at 4 o'clock. And if you had a cell, you'd call a cell and say, hey, look, can you do something for me tonight or first thing tomorrow morning? And you may have just saved 2 days because he was going to be in an offsite for the next 2 days. Look, if other people are handling all that stuff, all you can do is tell the candidate, we're working on it. And it just sounds lame.
Yes, it does.
Answers to candidates don't sound nearly as good when we can't say specifically what is going on. And it sounds way better when we can specifically say, here's what we're doing and here's what needs to be done. But we don't know if we're not in control of stuff. And you're not going to be in control of everything, but you can limit enormously the impact that your own actions have on the timing of the process.
Right. And if you intend to hire the person, and given the tightening market today for good talent, one might want to impress the person you're getting ready to potentially give an offer. Just saying.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the reasons I decided to address this when I did was I remember reading several years ago that there was a dry cleaner who had figured out how his business worked and was charging less for people to pick up sooner. And the reason is because you drop off your dry cleaning and it takes 3 days or, you know, come back in 3 days or whatever. But you don't think for a minute, how much time does it actually take to dry clean a garment? And the answer is 12 minutes. To clean it and to press it is 12 minutes. Now, that's if somebody's doing it specifically. I mean, it's not 3 hours, even if they're done in batches, right? But if you have to wait 3 days, he has to rent storage space. We've all seen the rotating automatic hanger racetrack that goes around with 5,000 garments on it, right? Which, by the way, people haven't paid for. And so he's paying money, that dry cleaner's paying money to rent space for that racetrack that he hasn't gotten paid for. So it just makes no sense at all. And there's a fundamental misunderstanding in organizations about process time versus value delivered by the process. And I would say that, you know, 40, 50, 60, 70% of process times could be eliminated if you look at where the value comes from. And we've certainly done that in the last 30 years in our production facilities. You know, it used to be where we used to have warehouses, which we had to pay for. And then we had to have people inside to go get stuff. And now it's all just in time. Part of the book, The Effective Hiring Manager, is about, we don't talk about it being just in time hiring. We talk about getting rid of the slack in the system so you can move quickly. And look, go further. If you have delays in administration, that's even worse once you've decided to actually hire. If someone else besides you decides that they think they need to check references, and the answer is they don't, okay, if you're doing it, but they have other references to check, mind you, this is all happening after you've decided this is the person you want. How likely is that person with multiple references to check? How likely are they to follow through and follow up with as much focus and speed as we are for our candidate? How likely is an entry-level hire's references going to be checked as fast as somebody who's a VP? If you're an HR generalist, you're going to be smart about the political sensitivity of the various hires you've got. And your boss has probably told you, by the way, that VP is somebody we need to take care of. And so your stuff is going to the back of the list. And how likely is HR going to consider checking the references a formality versus how seriously we might take it? I mean, in the last 20 years, one of the things about checking references is if somebody's been working at large companies, all they're going to say is, yeah, I can validate that this person worked here. That's all. We can validate dates of employment because they don't want risk associated with saying, yeah, he was great or he was terrible. They don't want to risk themselves or therefore risk the company, the reputation of the company. But maybe you could do faster with higher quality your own check through LinkedIn and so on, because if he only has an offer or is about to get an offer from you, he or she probably hasn't changed where they used to work, and you can find other people that work there, and you can say, hey, I'm calling to check references on so on. Oh, I didn't know he put me as a reference. Well, he didn't. I just thought I'd check a few of the people he works with. It's not that hard to do. Look, ask yourself a question, folks. Assume you have very high standards for hiring. Most managers don't, but assume you do. And that's good. We recommend that. Set the bar high. Now, if that's the case, how many hours will it take you to make an offer to a candidate once you've gotten hiring approval, an open requisition, or how many days or how many weeks? From the time you think, I have an opening I got to fill, through all the screening, all the interviews, all the admin, to making the offer. And I'm not talking about acceptance because you don't control the moment. You know, part of the definition of an offer is control passes to the candidate. Okay. You're probably thinking weeks, maybe a month. Some of you are thinking two or three. I would say maybe a third of you listening right now are saying as much as four or five or six months. And I say that because I've talked to people, I've been asking, and people say, oh, you know, with everything and so on, it's 4 months. But think about that for a second. What's good about a slow hiring process? I'm saying nothing about the deliberateness of the decision or the quality of the decision. The only way to justify a slow hiring process is to incorrectly correlate deliberateness or slowness with a high quality decision about whom to hire. But we're not making wine. If we can't trust our criteria, if we can't trust our own understanding of the jobs that report to us, if we can't develop trust ourselves regarding the quality of our interview questions, and then we can't trust ourselves with our ability to evaluate the answers we get, there's no amount of speed in the entire process overall, or lack thereof, that will make a difference in the quality of our hire. We might as well just flip a coin and take the next person who walks to the door. Slow or fast, we're going to end up with weak talent if we can't trust any of those things. So there's no legitimate correlation between hiring slowly and hiring well. But if you're trying to convince people, don't make a snap decision, don't hire somebody without an interview, don't hire somebody without a reference check, okay, fine. Yes, hire slow, but it doesn't take that long. It just doesn't.
Yeah, and it doesn't make sense to focus on the slow part when you could focus on the thoroughness or the quality of the interviews, right?
Or the quality of the decision.
That's the key, not that it's slow.
Yeah. Okay, now let's look at firing fast. Yes, we agree, in theory. Once we finally determine that someone doesn't meet reasonable standards, and we'll come back to that, it makes no sense to not act on that. The problem with that definition of moving quickly is the whole idea of reasonable standards. In my experience, if you ask me, the single biggest gaping hole in the practice of management in the world today, systemic management now, I'm talking about organizational management. I'm not talking about managers and their individual directs. I'm talking about a systemic indictment, and I apologize for doing it, but it's true, is the gross lack of clarity in the communication of goals and objectives to organizations. If you don't have clear goals and objectives and known goals and objectives and posted goals and objectives and available up and down the chain so everybody can see how they exist and how they link together and so on. If you don't have that systemically, and that's an organizational decision, you can certainly implement it yourself as an individual manager. That is the single greatest thing your organization can do managerially to make a difference in the near-term effects of the productivity and therefore profitability of your firm. Single biggest, no question. Now, if you're an individual manager, and remember, this is not organizational tools, this is manager tools. We're not trying to change your organization, we're trying to help you change yourself. And we figure if everybody in your company listens magically, your company will be transformed because organizational change is basically individual change aggregated.
Yeah, so we don't. So if you have a large organization, you're CEO of a large organization, and you have a lot of people, we don't want to talk to your organization, but we'd love to talk to each of your individuals.
Each of your individual managers. And look, let's be honest. We don't talk about our products and services very much because Mike and I are the kind of people that are delivering the product to you guys that we would want to hear. Whether we're right or wrong, some people don't like manager tools. That's okay. I think, Mike, what did you just, you just sent me an email saying how many listeners, how many downloads did we have last month?
2.3 million.
2.3 million? Okay.
Or 2.5 or 3 to a high
yeah, IQ. Yeah. You know, you really shouldn't talk that way. You shouldn't talk that way, dude. It's not appropriate. I mean, I really would prefer not 2.3, but an actual number.
Yeah, I think it's like 2.312.
See, again, you've got it. We need commas, not not full stops. Okay. Anyway, that's old. That's an old joke, guys. If you're relatively new and you don't know that joke, sorry. Ask a more experienced listener who's a friend of yours who probably referred you to us.
Just go listen to all the podcasts, all yes, thousand exactly. plus of Magically. Them, and you'll figure it out.
Yeah.
It's an Easter egg hunt. That's what it is.
Yeah. But the lack of goal setting, cascading of goal setting, management by objectives, OKRs, whatever, is so endemic as to be pandemic. And in far too many cases, even in the best managed companies in the world, there are no clear standards set or communicated. Okay. There are assumed. The VP assumes that the senior director has told her folks, okay, this is what I'm going to measure you on and so on. But no, that's not true. But all but a very few companies. The vast majority of organizations act as if there are standards at all levels when there are standards at almost no levels other than the very top. And how do we know there's a standard at that level? All you have to do is have a couple of bad quarters and you're fired. There's an old saying about executives. They don't get performance reviews on paper internally because their performance review is written every quarter in the Wall Street Journal. That's how executives are judged based on the numbers. And your organization will be a lot more successful if it's judged on the numbers at the margin, meaning between itself and its customers. It's judged on the numbers at the very top, and therefore managers need to be evaluated, analyzed on the numbers at all levels. That's the only way an organization, those words are similar for a reason, can stay in stasis. And if you're not in stasis with your environment, you die. And that's why organizations are incredibly inefficient, is that it takes a lot of energy in order to keep the organization alive if, in fact, you're not in stasis with your environment. And stasis, by the way, with growth as well.
Thanks, everyone. That's it for this week. We'll continue on this topic next week. In the meantime, have a great one. So long.